Hello out there, everybody. Nice to talk to you once again. Thanks for choosing the Then and Now podcast. This is episode number 22. I'm your host, John Shomo. Before we get to our normal list of things that we run down every week, I'd like to do a few shout outs here. Today, got to spend some time at a brunch with a couple of my colleagues, Lisa Dunton and Sue Whitman. For those of you who went to Talmadge High School, they held down rooms 1111 and 1121 in the new building for quite a few years. It's always great to see them. Happy to see them once again. And this afternoon, spent some time with current Talmadge folks, Mike Shadawa, the great track coach, and his buddy John Gurgley, and the Hall of Famer John Carnath. So it's a big day of hanging out with my former colleagues. Appreciate them all, and nice to see them all today. Okay, little Talmadge local business there to take care of. Let's get to it. Boy, has there been any news this week? Gosh, I think there has been. We'll get to it here, but we are going to stick with the format. And first of all, do the facts for the week for July 24th through 30th, starting with July 24th. On July 24th, 1974, that's 50 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a unanimous 8-0 decision in the case of United States versus Nixon. And in that decision, they said that President Nixon must turn over the Watergate tapes because even a president of the United States is not above the law. We got a slightly different version of that from the U.S. Supreme Court here in the past month or two, which is a little worrisome. But U.S. versus Nixon, 50 years ago this week. On July 24th, 1998, one of my favorite films, Saving Private Ryan, was released into theaters. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. It brings out so many emotions, and it's such a great story of our heroes back in World War II. Lots of birthdays on July 24th. Starting with Simon Bolivar, who founded several of the nations in Latin America. Simon Bolivar, born on July 24th, 1783. The aviator Amelia Earhart, who's been talked about a couple of other times here on Then and Now, was born on July 24th, 1897. Lots of folks still around. Dallas Cowboys Hall of Famer, the great Bob Lilly, number 74. He is 85 today, or on July 24th, as we record this. Michael Richards, the actor who played Kramer in Seinfeld, will be 75. Linda Carter, TV's Wonder Woman, for those of us of a certain age, Linda Carter will be 73. NBA Hall of Famer Karl Malone will be 61. Barry Bonds, former Pittsburgh Pirates outfielder, and that's all I'll say about him, will be 60. Jennifer Lopez, the fine actress and singer, will be 55. And finally, Elizabeth Moss, to many of us known as Zoe Bartlett. She's played a lot of other great roles, but those of us who rewatched and rewatched The West Wing would know her first as Zoe. Elizabeth Moss will be 42. Moving to July 25th. On July 25th, 1956, at Forbes Field in Pittsburgh, Roberto Clemente, there he is again, hit the only walk-off inside the park grand slam in Major League Baseball history. That's a walk-off inside the park grand slam as the Pirates rallied to beat the Cubs 9-8. That was on July 25th, 1956. He was just in his second full season in the major leagues. Birthdays on July 25th. Emmett Till, the young man from Chicago who went down to visit his cousins in Money, Mississippi, and was brutally murdered by two racists in 1955. Emmett Till was born July 25th, 1941. If you don't know about the Emmett Till case, you should read up about it. The Hall of Famer, Nate Thurman, the Basketball Hall of Famer from Akron, Ohio, born the same day as Emmett Till. That's hard to imagine. Nate was born on July 25th, 1941. The Hall of Fame football player, the late great Walter Payton of the Chicago Bears, was born July 25th, 1954. Passed away way too soon. Doug Drabek will be 62. Doug Drabek, the Pirates' right-hander, won the 1990 National League Cy Young Award, leading the Pirates to the National League East title that year. And 2021 Heisman Trophy winner Bryce Young out of the University of Alabama will be 23 on July 25th. Moving to July 26th, the United States Post Office was established by the Continental Congress on July 26, 1775. It was to be headed by a guy by the name of Ben Franklin. Perhaps you've heard of him. New York became the 11th state on July 26, 1788. President Harry Truman made history by desegregating the United States military with his Executive Order 9981 on July 26, 1948. Birthdays include the film director Stanley Kubrick, born July 26, 1928. Sir Mick Jagger, the Rolling Stones just finished a tour, believe it or not, and it's hard to believe. Mick Jagger's 81 now. The fine actress from Britain, Dame Helen Mirren, pardon me, Helen Mirren, will be 79. Gold medalist at the 1976 Winter Olympics in figure skating, America's sweetheart, Dorothy Hamill, will be 68. And actress Sandra Bullock will turn 60 on July 26th. All right, July 27th, the Korean War Armistice was signed. An armistice means a stop in fighting. It's not a peace treaty. There is no peace treaty with North Korea. The armistice was signed on July 27th, 1953, pardon me, to stop the fighting. Another gold medal figure skater, Peggy Fleming, the gold medalist in figure skating at the French Olympic Games in 1968. Peggy Fleming will be 76. Alex Rodriguez, the many-time All-Star Major League ball player, will be 49. And 2015 Masters and U.S. Open champ and 2017 Open champion Jordan Spieth will be 31. July 28th sees three birthdays. The late, great Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, the first lady in the early 1960s. Jackie Kennedy, born July 28, 1929. Basketball Hall of Famer and longtime United States Senator from New Jersey, the great Bill Bradley, will turn 81. I voted for Bill Bradley in the presidential primaries in 2000. He lost to Al Gore. I think Bill Bradley would have been a better candidate. Just me. Happy birthday to Bill Bradley. Dollar Bill was his nickname because he was money. And Nelly Korda from the world of golf will be 26 on July 28th. July 29th, the first ever female major party presidential nominee, Hillary Clinton, was nominated at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia on July 29th, 2016. More about female major party candidates in a few minutes here, I think. Birthdays July 29th include Italian dictator during World War II, Benito Mussolini, born July 29th, 1883. Didn't end well for him in the town square in Milan. Look it up. ABC longtime anchorman, the late Peter Jennings from Canada, was born July 29, 1938. And current Dallas Cowboys quarterback out of Mississippi State University, talked about every single day, I think, by order on ESPN, Dak Prescott will be 31 on July 29th. Finally, for our rundown this week, we move to July 30th. The USS Indianapolis, which is the ship that delivered the atomic bomb to the base from where it was flown to be dropped on Japan. The Indianapolis delivered the bomb, was on its way back across the Pacific. It was torpedoed and sunk in the Pacific Ocean on July 30th, 1945. Many of the crew members perished. 300 or so survived. It's an unbelievable story, really. Birthdays, July 30th. Henry Ford, born July 30th, 1863. I think he probably needs no introduction. Hall of Fame manager, won seven World Series titles with the New York Yankees, the great Casey Stengel. What a character. Born July 30th, 1890. Singer Paul Anka, still around, still singing at the age of 83. Happy birthday to Paul Anka. Arnold Schwarzenegger will be 77, believe it or not, on July 30th. Hilary Swank, the actress, will turn 50. And Justin Rose, the 2013 U.S. Open champ, almost bagged another major championship this past weekend over at Royal Troon in Scotland. Justin Rose will be 44 on July 30th. Okay, there's our birthdays and anniversaries for this week. We love to start out with those every time. Now on to our current topics segment. Boy, do we have some stuff this week. I was watching the end of the Open Championship on Sunday. And just as the tournament ended and they were lining up to give the trophy presentations, I looked at my phone and I saw the letter from President Biden indicating that he would stand down and not pursue the presidency in the election of 2024. A lot of mixed emotions there. First of all, let's understand something. There was a lot of pressure being put on him for the last week or so, particularly since he was diagnosed with COVID for the third time. I think that diagnosis kind of sealed it with a lot of people. He's noticeably slowed down physically. I think we all know that, but I think the third COVID diagnosis was the sealer. Only he could make that decision. He's the president of the United States. A lot of people persuaded him to do it, but the decision is totally up to him as president, and only he could make it. And he finally came to that conclusion on Sunday and announced it to the world via that letter. The other thing that's in stone, as far as I'm concerned, is the only rational choice to replace him at the top of the ticket was the vice president. Kamala Harris has accepted that role and will be the nominee of the Democratic Party. They will have their convention in Chicago here in a couple of weeks. More about that here in a minute. But that's the only way that could have come down. And it came down Sunday, and here we are. I'm talking about it on Tuesday night. You're listening to it after that. Who is Kamala Harris? Basically, for those of you who didn't follow the 2020 election very carefully, she's a former Attorney General of California, former prosecutor. She was elected to the Senate there and served for a number of years as U.S. Senator from California, chosen by Joe Biden to be his running mate in 2020. They won, and she has been vice president for the last 3.5 years. It sets up, to say the least, an unbelievable contrast in the two major party candidates for president. Here is a female, younger person, 59 years old, which is much younger than the Republican nominee. Former prosecutor, put people behind bars, versus the 34 times convicted felon and adjudicated rapist running for the Republican Party. This contrast should fire up young voters, women, and people of color. I think it will. I think that goes without saying, really. It dramatically changes the race because of this. It energizes Democratic voters. Democratic voters were not really energized prior to this move, and they're going to need that to win. It's going to be a turnout election, as most of them are in the end. And if Democrats can turn out their base of voters in large numbers, I believe they'll win. And this will help them do that. I'm not predicting anything, but it certainly gives them a much better chance to win this election. As we've been talking about it, many of my friends and Tammy and Matt and everybody, she's Hillary Clinton without the nagging issues, her emails and some of the shady real estate deals that were in her past and so forth. Kamala Harris really doesn't have those issues in her past. And I think it dramatically changes the race for president. I think the Republicans are kind of regretting their pick of J.D. Vance. As the running mate for former President Trump, and it's a very, very key big moment in the 2024 election campaign season, to say the least. I do want to make some comparisons here, and I'll lean on my history background for this. A lot of reminders of 1968, not all, but a lot of reminders of 1968 here with this current situation. One of which is being we have an incumbent Democratic president making a decision in the election year not to seek re-election. The other time that happened in my lifetime was 1968, when President Johnson, at the end of March, in a speech about the Vietnam War, announced that he would not seek nor accept the nomination of the Democratic Party. That sent it to basically an open convention in Chicago. So that's a similarity here. We have an incumbent president deciding not to seek re-election late in the game here in July, and his vice president will now likely get the nod, as did Mr. Johnson's vice president, Hubert Humphrey, in 1968. That's the second similarity. The third is the convention's being held in Chicago in late August. Those of us of a certain age remember the 1968 Democratic Convention as complete and utter chaos, rioting in the parks, rioting in the streets, fights on the floor of the arena that that convention was held at, by the way, was the Chicago Amphitheater, which is no more. It's on the near south side when it existed, down near the old stockyards. The arena which this convention will be held at is the United Center, the home of the Chicago Bulls and the Chicago Blackhawks. So that's a little different, but they're in the city of Chicago. Those are some similarities, certainly, between, as we like to say, then and now. The differences are stark as well. 1968 had already been a tragic, really terrible year. In early April, Martin Luther King Jr. had been assassinated in Memphis. Roughly 2 months later, Senator Robert Kennedy, running for the Democratic nomination, was assassinated in the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. In August of 1968, we were having roughly 200 U.S. boys getting sent back from Vietnam in body bags and coffins. And that had worn down the American public. We certainly don't have a situation like that right now. And that was the reason, really the major reason, for all of the riots and demonstrations in Chicago in 1968. Hubert Humphrey, the vice president, was going to be the nominee, and he had not separated himself from Lyndon Johnson's war policies. And many people who had been Democratic supporters were turning on Humphrey and the party as they met in Chicago that year. That's not happening now. The Democratic Party loves Joe Biden. Many of us, I'll include myself, just maybe thought he was too old to win once again. He's 81 years old, as you may know. But he's a beloved figure, even more so now. I think this act of I don't know what to call it, just self-awareness or magnanimity, is making them love him even more, I think, at this point. His record's full of great achievements, like Lyndon Johnson's. Lyndon Johnson, if you take Vietnam away from his record, was a all-time great president. Of course, you can't take the 800-pound gorilla out of the room, which was Vietnam. Biden's record is full of great achievements, and I think he'll go down as a very successful president in the end, unlike Lyndon Johnson, sadly for him. Okay. I'm sure we'll do a lot more about that as the weeks go on, but that's where we stand right now, and I needed to weigh in on that certainly. While we're on the election topic, I want to speak for a minute about polling. As we have a change in the top of the Democratic ticket, the pollsters are just starting to grind out poll after poll after poll, public opinion poll. They're flooding the airways and the newspapers and the publications with new polls in light of the Harris impending nomination. Let me remind everybody about a couple of things. And if you were one of our students at THS and had me for class, I tried to go over this with you. I'm not a statistician per se, but I do understand polling. First, any poll which has any candidate within 2 or 3 points of each other is statistically tied. There's a margin of error in any poll because it's a sampling of people. If it's 1,000 people being sampled, the margin of error is usually about 3.5% either way. Any poll which shows one candidate 2 points ahead of another, for instance, is really statistically tied. That's all you can accurately say about the poll. No news organization will be accurate, however. That's a big problem. Any outlet reporting a lead in that situation is committing malpractice, and they all do it. So just keep that in mind as you're bombarded with poll numbers here, as we all will be from now to November. Number two, I want to get to the veracity of some of these polls, actually. I saw a poll last week that was of the state of Georgia. It was before President Biden dropped out. And it was a poll authorized by Fox News, who's actually had pretty good polling histories in the past. The poll showed former President Trump up 3 points in Georgia, again, within the margin of error. But you dig into the numbers, and this is what you find. Of the 800 respondents to the poll in the state of Georgia, only 17 of them were African Americans. What's the percentage of voters in Georgia that are African Americans? It was roughly 30% in 2020. So you do the math. 30% of 800 is 240. They had 17 respondents as African Americans in this poll. That's not representative of the population, the voting population of the state of Georgia. Really, if you have a poll and you can only get 17 people to respond out of a group that should be 240, you shouldn't release the poll. But they're going to release them anyway, and the reporters will report them as veracity, and it's just not so. I don't know what the poll would have looked like if it was 240 African Americans voting. Probably a little bit better for Biden. But my point is, you got to really dig deep and look into these polls to see if they're accurate. And there are going to be way too many of them coming up, and they won't be reported well. So that's just a warning to everybody out there about polling. Saw a poll this afternoon. Kamala Harris up 2 points in a head-to-head matchup with former President Trump, up 4 points in a three-way matchup that includes Robert F. Kennedy Jr. It's not outside the margin of error. They should report it as that. They didn't, and they won't, and that's a problem. Okay, so that's just a public service announcement here from somebody that's spent a little too much time in his life thinking about public opinion polling. So, okay, now to the toy department of the news, the sports world, briefly this week. Congratulations to Xander Schauffele. He should be maybe player of the year this year, winning his second major championship of the year. He won the PGA Championship back in May, as you recall. He was the Open champion this past weekend at Troon. It was really fun to watch because for me, what made it fun was most of the players at the top of the leaderboard really played well on Sunday. It wasn't one or two guys just kind of choking or collapsing. All those guys played really good golf on Sunday. It was really fun to watch it. This becomes the first time since 1982 that all four major championships this year have been won by American golfers. We had Scottie Scheffler won the Masters. Schauffele won the PGA and, of course, the Open last weekend. And Bryson DeChambeau won at Pinehurst, as we talked about earlier. So, congratulations to him. It was really good golf to watch. Also, I need to tip my hat to the former Pirates manager, Jim Leland, one of my favorites. He was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame this past weekend, along with players Adrian Beltre, Joe Mauer, and Todd Helton. Congratulations to all of them. But Jim Leland's one of my favorites of all time. It's so great to see him recognized for not only his experience with the Pirates, but the Marlins and the Tigers as well. Awesome. He's a great manager. He deserved better in Pittsburgh. They really, really tantalized us in the early 90s and came so close. But way to go, Jimmy. Okay. Now to the three good questions part of the podcast here to wrap it up. I did not give the email address last week. My bad. The email address, if you want to get in contact with us with a comment or a question, is three good questions, THREE, good questions at gmail.com. That's three good questions at gmail.com. First, we'll answer last week's question that I hung out there for you. I only got four of the six myself without looking them up. It was Jeff Cole's question. Who are the six Hall of Famers that won both the U.S. Open and the Open Championship in the same year? I named four: Tiger Woods, Lee Trevino, Tom Watson, and the great Bobby Jones. The other two were Gene Sarazen back in the 1930s and the great Ben Hogan in the early 1950s. So those are your six answers to Jeff's question last week. Thanks again for your question, Jeff. I'm going to throw one out there myself to begin this week. And again, three good questions at gmail.com if you have the answer. No fair looking it up. See if you can get it without looking it up. There are nine states out of the 50 that do not have an FBS school. That is football bowl subdivision, major college football. Okay. No FBS schools in nine of the 50 states. What are those nine states? Again, if you can get them, email them to us at threegoodquestions@gmail.com. All right, next question is from my golfing partner, the former Kenmore High School great basketball coach, Harry Jordan. Here it is. And this happened in one of our golf rounds a week or so ago. Is there a name for a golfer doing this? You're in the sand, you hit the shot, it stays in the sand. You hit the second sand shot, knocking it on the green, and you sink the putt. If you do that with one sand shot, it's called a sandy. Is there a name for if you leave it in, get it out, and make the putt? I don't know if there is or not. I've not been able to find one. If anybody knows that there is, let us know. Thanks for the question, Harry. Third question and final one this week is from the great Tammy Shomo. In light of Akron's own LeBron James being selected by the U.S. Olympic team as flag bearer in Paris this weekend, that's a great honor. Congratulations to LeBron for that. Just a kid from Akron. Have there been any other Olympic flag bearers from Ohio? So that sent me scurrying to look up an answer. And the answer is there has been one other flag bearer at Olympic Games from the state of Ohio. His name is Scott Hamilton. And those of us, again, of a certain age will remember him as a medalist in the 1980 figure skating Olympic in the 1980 Olympics at, in figure skating at Lake Placid, New York. I think he won the silver medal. I didn't look that up. Scott Hamilton was born in Toledo, Ohio. So LeBron joins Scott Hamilton as the only two Ohioans ever to be bestowed with that honor of being the American flag bearer in Paris. Now, as you watch the Olympic Games this weekend, you're going to notice usually the teams walk into the stadium behind the flag bearer and they all line up in the field and so forth. Paris, you know, they're the French. They got to do things a little more dramatically and differently. In Paris, each team is going to be on a ship or a boat in the Seine River, and they're going to sail up the Seine, presumably near the Eiffel Tower, as delegations. I don't know what they're where they're going to park all the boats at the end. Okay, you know, maybe they haven't figured that out yet, but that's going to be different, and I'm kind of meh about that. I love the parades of the teams and watching them come in the stadium. I don't know about sailing up the Seine. You know, it's very French, I guess. Très bien. Okay. Thanks, Tammy, for the question. And Scott Hamilton, the answer. Okay. That'll do it for a very crowded edition of Then and Now. Thanks for choosing us out there. You can find us on Spotify. And we'll wrap it up for this week. I'm your host, John Shomo. This is the podcast Then and Now. Again, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a good week, everybody.